Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. This Friday marks the 30th World AIDS Day after its inception in 1988, towards the end of the decade that brought the AIDS epidemic front and center. However, at that time, it was a disease surrounded by stigmas and misinformation, which is what inspired World AIDS Day, with the purpose of raising awareness of the facts about HIV/AIDS and to show support to those living with HIV. The Joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS reports there were approximately 36.7 million people living with HIV globally in 2016, 1.1 million of whom live in the U.S. And in Southwest Florida, at least 4,000 individuals are living with HIV in 2015 and another 5,000 living with AIDS. Joining us now is Dr. Yen Desta. He's the AIDS Healthcare Foundation's Regional Medical Director. Thanks for coming in, Dr. Desta.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Jean-Mano Titus, the HIV/AIDS Program Coordinator for Southwest Florida and with the Florida Department of Health. Thank you for being here, Jean-Mano.
Thank you for having me, Julie.
We are talking about HIV/AIDS in Southwest Florida in light of World AIDS Day coming up this Friday. And you can become part of our conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Jean-Mano Titus, HIV/AIDS Southwest Florida Program Coordinator for the Florida Department of Health. The United States Department of Health says that the rate of new infections of HIV across the country dropped 18% between 2008 and 2014. How does Florida compare?
Well, I would say we've been able to develop a lot of very effective programs to, help and assist the population to understand and get access to care. So if you take Florida for 2016, we have known an increase of 8.1%.
Oh, so we've gone up.
Yes, yes. And that might be the result of the fact that we've been very proactive in increasing our testing, increasing access to care, because sometimes more testing you have, and that can have a result where you can show, an increase.
So you're saying that maybe just because of an increased outreach that you've been doing may be part of the reason why we're seeing an increase in the number of diagnosed cases?
That's very possible.
Because there are more people getting tested and things like that.
Yes.
So the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS reports that the rate of HIV and AIDS is now about 50 to 50 in men and women, 50% men, 50% women. Is that true here in the U.S. or is that's more of a global number? Are you seeing that here?
Globally, that's what we have noticed. But here in the U.S., I would say it's about 40% and up male and versus female. For instance, if you take the model or the Lee County situation, we have around 70% male who are diagnosed with HIV versus 33% or 30% female diagnosed with HIV in 2016.
Oh, so in Lee County, it's 70% male and 33%-ish women.
Women.
Have HIV/AIDS. Wow. So, Dr. Desta, the Regional Medical Director for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, what's the difference between living with HIV and living with AIDS?
So, living with HIV is having the virus, whether you are on treatment or not, and your immune system might not have declined to the extent, to be called, AIDS stage. AIDS is basically when you have the final stages of HIV infection. So these days we have more patients in the HIV stage than AIDS, cases. And the reason is because more patients are getting treated, more patients are getting tested, and the treatments are effective. So an HIV patient on treatment will not advance to AIDS stage. That's almost a guarantee. So what that means also is if an HIV person takes a medication as they are supposed to, they will have a lifespan as good as an HIV patient. In fact, they are dying these days from other complications like, lung cancer, complications from diabetes or heart disease, just like the general population.
So I'm curious, does AIDS always begins with someone getting HIV and you have this disease, kind of like you're a carrier, you're not having any symptoms, but you just happen to have it?
Exactly. The gateway to reach to AIDS is HIV infection. There is no other infection that will give you AIDS.
So who are we seeing progressing to AIDS?
Basically, people who don't get tested and show up in the emergency room very sick because they didn't think they were at risk, or people who knew they were infected and didn't take their medications.
How hard is it to take these medications? Are they hard to get a hold of? Are they expensive?
They are expensive, you know, if you try to pay out of pocket, but nobody pays out of pocket. So there are different programs. If you have insurance, obviously the insurance will pay. If you have a copay, there are many, many copay assistance programs. So most patients basically pay zero. If you don't have insurance, there is a program run by the state called ADAP, AIDS Drug Assistance Program. And the qualification is very easy in terms of income. Most patients will qualify. If they are not working, almost all of them will qualify for ADAP. So if somebody is infected, they shouldn't, you know, pay anything out of their pocket for the medication. They may, based on their insurance for doctor's visit or lab, based on their co-insurance or co-payment, not for the medication.
So you have a co-pay to go visit the doctor. But
medication-wise, they shouldn't, you know, pay a dime, period.
What is the treatment like now if you do have HIV? Are you taking an entire cocktail of pills, or is it one or two a day, or what is
it? At most, if you take many medications, it will be two pills. But most of it is just one pill with three or four medications in the single pill. So these medications are easy to take. They have very, very minimal side effects. You know, they can be taken with any food. They can be taken with most other medications out there, you know, if somebody has other medical issues like diabetes, heart disease. So people don't take it because of lack of knowledge, because, you know, they don't want to take it. It's not because the medications are toxic like they used to be, you know, in the early 80s.
Yeah, I remember back in the days, there were a whole bunch of pills you had to take. And,
yes.
And they kind of made you sick. They had a bunch of side effects, things like
yes.
that. But it's not like that anymore.
It's not like that. Even back then, one of the problems why people took a lot of pills is because most of them were in AIDS stage. And when you are in AIDS stage, you know, we have to give you a lot of antibiotics to prevent infections. So you will take HIV medications and you will take what we call prophylactic antibiotics, like, you know, Bactrim to prevent from pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what made the cocktail big at that time. On top of that, most of the medications were twice or three times a day. Not anymore. We have come a long way.
It's hard to remember taking things three times a day.
Exactly. Even a doctor won't remember.
Yeah, I can hardly even take a vitamin once a day. So it's tough. So the question I wanted to ask also is, when you have somebody that didn't realize they had HIV and then suddenly they have a couple symptoms and they're not feeling so good and they realize they have AIDS, is there any coming back from that?
Yes. So even if somebody reaches the AIDS stage with treatment, you know, they can, you know, increase their immune function. They can bring the virus down and they can live long. But the life expectancy is not as good as somebody, you know, starting medication in HIV stage. So if somebody starts in AIDS stage, they have a long way to come up.
All right. So Jean Monotitis, with the HIV-AIDS Southwest Florida Program Coordinator with the Department of Health, some of the symptoms of HIV are as simple as a dry cough or gastrointestinal pain. Those seem easy enough to write off as just a cold or a virus as a person, you know, exhibiting those symptoms. But how about doctors? Are doctors trained to recognize these types of symptoms as possibly being symptomatic of moving into AIDS?
Yes, and we've been very fortunate in Southwest Florida to have a very close collaboration between doctors and the county health department. And we have a group of doctors and well-trained to do so. And we have a group of CBOs and HIV healthcare providers. And so if someone has been seen by the primary care doctor and they have any concerns, they can, you know, talk to the doctor about referring them to one of the ID specialist doctors.
Well, if someone decides to go in, you know, just to get a checkup, but they don't specifically ask about being tested for HIV, are doctors testing them anyway?
Well, that's one of the
things. Do you have to specifically ask for it?
You have to, as a patient, you know, seek what is best for you. However, the state of Florida, particularly the Bureau of HIV/AIDS, has been very active in contacting doctors and putting together what we call four key components in terms of strategy for the 2020, where we want people to have more access to care, more access to training, and doctors in healthcare settings are very encouraged to discuss HIV, but at the same time, the population would like to encourage them to be the advocate for themselves each time they have the opportunity to see the primary care doctor. Feel free to ask the doctor, what about discussing an HIV testing? And from there, that will be a way to foster conversation about HIV testing.
Psychologically, it's kind of hard to get someone to want to go to their doctor and say, hey, I'm maybe a little bit nervous. So there's such a powerful desire to deny that there could be anything wrong or that they could be in any of these risk groups or any of, you know, mm-hmm. I think it might be kind of tough to sell people on doing that.
So CDC, actually, I think it was in 2005, have, you know, put out a recommendation for physicians, you know, to test anybody that they come in contact with, whether it is in their office or in the emergency room or in the hospital. So HIV test should be actually a universal test. Just like, you know, you'll have your white cell checked or your kidneys checked, your liver checked. HIV should be a routine test, at least, you know, for the first time you see a doctor. So most patients, obviously, because they don't think, you know, they are at risk.
I don't even want to know what my cholesterol levels are. You know, I mean,
exactly.
I should know, but I don't want to hear this bad news.
The same way, you know, patients may not be really eager to know their HIV status. So that really the push should come from healthcare providers. And this has been out since 2005, but not everybody's on board, unfortunately.
Well, according to the United States Department of Health, 1 in 7 of the 1.1 million with HIV in America doesn't even know that they have it.
And that's the very scary part, because people with HIV who take their medications don't give HIV to the next person. The people who pass HIV are the ones who don't know their status and the ones who don't take medication. So if somebody's undetectable, they are also untransmissible.
If I may add something, that's why you can see the United Nations, you know, for AIDS program. They put together a program, what we call 90-90-90. They want 90% of people who are living with HIV to know the status. And the way to do it is by increasing access to testing, access to care. The second 90, it's to have the 90% of those who are diagnosed with HIV to be on treatment and to stay on treatment. And lastly, 90% of those who are diagnosed and in treatment to have a viral load suppressed, which is to have an undetected viral load. And anytime they have an undetected viral load, it's more, you know, it's less risky for them to pass it on to another person.
Less transmittable.
Yes.
I gotcha. So, Dr. Desta, you are the regional medical director for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. Have you ever had to personally break the news to a patient before that they are HIV positive?
So, unfortunately, no. At least in the clinic setting, in the hospital setting, yes. In the clinic setting, my role is a provider, which means, you know, I usually see them once they have tested positive. We have a testing program. So once they test positive, you know, they will be, you know,
then they reference to you.
Yeah. So the last time I broke the news was 2009 when I was, you know, in the hospital really.
Well, in 2009, things were different. You know, everything has advanced, you know, so much.
It was, yes, things were different 2009, but it was good days, but better days, I would say, today.
Yeah, better. I mean, you know, breaking this news to someone in 1989 or 1990 mm-hmm. would have been much
a death
more
sentence,
difficult.
Yes.
But now it sounds like it's, I mean, not necessarily, you know, wonderfully positive news, but it's not as bad as it had been in the past.
In terms of their, you know, outlook, prognosis is not as bad, but, you know, any diagnosis is kind of devastating, you know. Even if I tell somebody they have diabetes, you know, that's kind of devastating because it means, you know, they have to change their lifestyle. It means now they have to look at life a little bit different. But HIV is not a death sentence. I will tell that, you know, clearly and emphatically. Actually, it's easier to treat HIV than diabetes these days.
Wow. So testing, how much does it cost? Is it covered by insurance? How does that work?
Testing is free.
Okay, so there's really no excuse not to get tested.
No.
All right. So does everyone who contracts HIV eventually, they don't develop AIDS, but as they get towards, if they don't take the medication, then that's how they end up getting themselves into AIDS. And once that happens, how far along does it have to go before it's not reversible? I mean, because somebody may dismiss these symptoms, think they have the flu, think they just have, you know, digestive upset or mm-hmm. whatever. Can they let that go for a certain amount of time and then not be able to bring it back?
So people with AIDS die from, you know, what we call, you know, from opportunistic infections or opportunistic cancers, not from the HIV itself. So if somebody has, let's say, an opportunistic cancer like, you know, central nervous system lymphoma, you know, they may die because their immune system may take time to build. So before they are put on medication and their immune system is, you know, up and working, you know, the lymphoma may take their life. So it depends on what stage of AIDS they, you know, present. Somebody with AIDS CD4 of, you know, 180 and somebody in AIDS stage with T-cell count or CD4 of, you know, 5, two different prognoses.
Mm-hmm. Completely different. Jean-Monnot Titus, we talked a little bit earlier about an increase in the number of AIDS cases in the state of Florida. Do you feel like that could have anything to do with the prevalence now of heroin use and the opioid epidemic and the use of needles?
Well, we cannot so far make a direct connection. But what I would say, anytime you have substance abuse, situation where people have less control of the decision-making process, that can have an impact on their sexual behavior, and that can contribute to some increase. But we do not have, you know, data to support direct connection, to the best of my knowledge, between opioid substance abuse and the increase of HIV.
Because I remember when it all first came out in the 80s, there was a discussion about heroin use and the needle sharing and things like that. They talked about that being a big contributor back then. But now it seems like we're seeing it all over again with the heroin use. I mean, it came from a different path. It came from the opioid situation. But that whole needle situation, I'm surprised they don't have data that's talking about that yet.
I think that the reason maybe because we haven't seen an outbreak like the one in Indiana, Scott County. But I'm sure there is some kind of a calm before the storm. And I'm sure each state will be hit with an outbreak related to HIV drug use and HIV infections.
Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to also ask, we often hear that minority communities tend to be overrepresented as being diagnosed with HIV AIDS. Have you both seen this, you know, in practice here?
It's true. I mean, it's true for all other, you know, diseases too. You know, even, you know, in terms of, you know, heart disease, you know, diabetes, minority patients tend to get to the doctor late, tend to have more complications, tend to have, you know, poor outcome. And still, you know, it's a disease of the poor community. It's a disease of, you know, people with poor knowledge also.
As the economic situation, is it maybe also a fear of going to the doctor or inability to get to the doctor, don't want to pay that copay?
It is. Because for some patients, you know, even, you know, paying, you know, $5 or, you know, the $10 copay is a lot of money when people are living, you know, basically under poverty, you know, line.
Mm-hmm. And Jean-Monnot Titus, with the program coordinator for the Florida Department of Health, tell me about what kind of outreach your department's going to be doing for World AIDS Day.
Well, we have been able to develop over the years, you know, very close and collaborative event within the health department and providers. But this year, we have, for instance, the candlelight vigil and commemoration in downtown Fort Myers mm-hmm. on December 1st from 2 to 6 p.m. And it's open to the public. There will be free HIV testing and other health screening. We have also the World AIDS Forum sponsored by Delta's Life Development Center on Michigan Avenue, December 1st. And we have a list of programs, you know, put together by the McGregor Clinic from 11-27, that's mean yesterday, through December the 3rd, where there will be mobile unit testing in the community on college campuses and at the clinic. We have also the Charlotte County Health Department. They're organizing at Edgewater Methodist Church some screening on the 30th.
And we have links to all of that on our website, but we have just run out of time. But we do have links at WGCUnews.org for people to find out more about all of that. I want to thank you both for coming in and talking with us about World AIDS Day. Dr. Yen Desta, thank you so much. And also Jean-Monod Titus with the Southwest Florida Department of Health. I really appreciate you both coming in.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Our show today was produced by Mike and Irie and Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.